Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guests are Annie, Jeannie, and Marie, the Byrne sisters, the Finger Lakes' best woman band, as far as I'm concerned. Welcome to the show. It's so nice to have you guys here. You know, I know you come from a huge family, a very creative family. Did you always know you'd go into music, or were there other avenues that you were going to pursue early on?
Well, I think I really, this is Jeannie speaking, I really was interested in theater as well. But it was either one of the two. Those were where I was drawn to at a young age.
Uh-huh. What about you, Marie?
I never really thought about it until I got offered $5 to sing with somebody. Jeannie and I, we were offered to sing with our friend Dennis Devine in Florida at a party. And then I remember in the parking lot we had this epiphany that, wow, we could actually do this.
But did you sing that as a family as well?
Well, we always sang everything.
Yeah, my mother was a singer.
My mother was a singer. It was just more, it wasn't like something
impromptu,
we were
going
to do.
Right.
It was just something that was just part of our life.
Mm-hmm. So, did you ever have other aspirations, Annie?
I think as a young, I always wanted to sing, and I always did, but I thought music or politics. My father was in politics, so mm-hmm. our father.
Who art
in heaven.
Yes.
He was the mayor, and so he was, to me, like, you know, my mother really would, we all put him on a pedestal, but he was a good person to put on a pedestal. So he was a good role model, and I think I was interested.
I was wondering, do any of you have formal training in
yes,
music?
Yes, I have a lot of formal voice training.
Do
this
you?
This is Annie, and Jeannie and I both studied with this really special teacher in New York. But
it was kind of after we started singing. Mm-hmm. For me especially, I was losing my voice a lot, so the training really was basically to teach me how not to, which I still occasionally lose it, but I know how to.
Also, I think that, our mother was a singer, opera singer style, but she taught us a lot of tips on how not to strain your voice mm-hmm. and how to call all your 12 children in the neighborhood and embarrass your children without straining your voice.
I'm sure she probably got to exercise her voice quite a bit.
You
want to
hear how she called us?
Yes, please.
Okay, everybody, 1, 2, 3.
No, I studied with a lot of different teachers, though, in Binghamton, actually, uh-huh. And also in New York again. And so I actually give voice lessons. And a lot of times I teach people who are formally trained and they don't want to sound, you know, with a lot of vibrato in their voices.
Ah.
They want to sound untrained.
So they want to sound so more popish.
I'm the folk pop vocal coach.
Interesting, yeah. I know a lot of singers like Joan Baez have had to go back and pursue training when they got older because they were losing their voices. That's interesting that mm-hmm. that you did it before it happened. Your harmonies are so gorgeous. Did you guys have to work at that and practice a lot to get your voices to gel like that? Or was it a natural?
We did a lot of we did a lot of practice.
I think just
really
by doing it was
staying along.
Practice. I mean, mm-hmm. we kind of naturally could harmonize. Our mom taught us when we were little, you know, this is the harmony, so we just automatically, every song we ever heard, we just grabbed parts to it. You know,
and
we grew up listening
to
it.
She'd teach you your part and then say, okay, hold your ears now, sing that part. And then she'd teach someone else their part. Then everyone would sing it together.
But as professionals, like we worked with
right.
Marie's first husband,
David Kent,
who, mm-hmm. you know, when I saw the movie, a Ray Charles movie, uh-huh. and watching these backup singers, it was just so cool for me. I mean, I know that we were just so raised in the Motown mold that we were taught like that to sing. So when we sing in a group, we sing as a chord. And so it was kind of fun to watch those singers and see how David had trained us. We were right. David Kent and featuring the Byrne sisters. That was one of our first bands.
How neat.
And,
that's great.
But he
was a great vocal coach, and he also worked with Hall & Oates, so he learned how to do all that sort of Philly sound and the oohs. And
did you know early on that you guys were going to stay together and form a band and make CDs and become actually quite famous in this area? Was that your intention? Or were you just fooling around at first?
I remember with Jeannie, like Marie and Jeannie had their own experience, and we're all each a year apart, but I remember with Jeannie, we lived in New York City during high school, and we were sitting in the park, and we joined the Jewish Community Center there, and we were in every play, and we were studying voice, we were doing all kinds of things. But one time we're sitting in the park singing and old Linda Ronstadt songs, and we looked at each other and went like, wow, you know, we could do this. I really said that, we could do this. It was really
so you just
that was
sort
pretty,
of
yeah, I think we,
it
we
sort
realized
of happened.
That, you know, we know how to harmonize. We're pretty good singers, and if we really wanted to, this could be an avenue for us.
And so you were able to do that and keep your family and your friendship together. That's an amazing thing.
Wonder
too,
of wonder, in regard to miracle of
Is it a continuous struggle though to try to have individual lives instead? And
yeah, you know, I don't even think about it as a process as so much. It's just part of life in the way we can sort of flow.
The way that life is struggle, I suppose it's struggle.
I don't like that word.
Right.
Anybody who's worked in a collective, like a group collective or, you know, a business collective or actually family, you get to know people pretty well. And so, you know, like somebody's having a bad day, you can go like,
I'm just gonna ignore that, you let things go.
And you know where all the buttons are, and occasionally you feel like pushing one.
Oh, I bet you do. Do you guys do consensus or majority rules in regard to decisions that are up in the air?
Certain rules are majority, and certain decisions, I mean, are veto power.
Oh.
But very few have veto power. Most of them are consensus. You
we usually agree on a lot of
we
stuff.
Do.
I would
do.
Assume so.
Yeah.
I mean, your harmonies make it sound like you probably can.
We do. I mean, you
somehow.
Know, we have different. We change roles in the band. I mean, you know, it's just after this many years, you just.
Yeah.
There's no plan. There's nothing written.
Maybe that's our problem. Or
spontaneous.
Or maybe
spontaneous chaos.
Like on the CDs that we've been making, like on this next CD, which we leave tomorrow to start on, like each one of us will have four songs, and each one of us will produce those four songs, although we're all together when we're producing, so like, you know, we're still really open to each other's stuff, but the one person who has picked or written that song, if that's their song that they want, that's the one that they have the final say. But right. Usually we pretty much agree on stuff.
And you know what, I'm going to suggest that we listen to a little piece from the new CD.
This ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the wars against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the U.S. It's coming from a crack in the wall, on a visionary flood of alcohol, from the staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to understand at all. It's coming from the silence on the dock of the bay, the brave, the bold, the battered, the heart of Chevrolet. Democracy is coming to the USA. It's coming from the sorrow in the streets, the holy places where the races meet, from the homicidal pigeon that goes down in every kitchen to determine who will serve. Wells of disappointment, where the women kneel to pray for the grace of God in the desert here and the desert far away. Democracy is coming to the USA. America first. cradle of the best and the worst. 'Cause it's here they've got the range and the machinery for change, and it's here they've got the spiritual thirst, and it's here the family's broken, and it's here the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way. Democracy is coming. I'm sentimental, if you know what I mean. I love the country, but I can't stand the scene. And I'm neither left nor right, I'm just staying home tonight, getting lost in that hopeless little screen. But I'm stubborn as those garbage bags that time cannot decay. I'm junk, but I'm still holding up this little wild bouquet. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Have you guys ever considered going national? Have you ever tried to get a big label or get attention
nationally? We were on Columbia Records when we were a rock band many years ago. And
we were the Spice Girls before the Spice Girls were the Spice Girls in 1986.
Really? And what happened with that?
Well, we got another record deal. We sold enough to get a second deal. And then a week before the release of the second Columbia production, they got a new vice president, and about 50 acts were dropped, and we were one of them.
Really? Oh, that is. And so, but you didn't want to continue pursuing
that, No. So then we went our sort of separate. We were five sisters then, mm-hmm. with five sisters. Mm-hmm. Then we all kind of were gathering ourselves. We kept trying to make it work, but it just didn't work. So then we decided to go down the folk a little bit more to our roots and start writing our own music rather than just the lyrics, which had been with the previous Columbia record. Mm-hmm. And so then we went with Rounder Records. So that's how.
Who are some of your influences besides the Supremes?
I really like Etta James, Bonnie Raitt, and Linda Ronstadt. I can't say that they were huge influences on us.
I mean,
in fact, people would come to our house and when we were teenagers and go okay, well, your record collection would be all women that we would have in there.
Lauren
Euro. Where's all the guys? Uh-huh. What do you mean guys?
Well, not James that they Taylor, weren't, we were pretty into.
I know, but we did. Most of our record collection were female vocalists.
When writers, we were really young, the Jackson 5.
Really? Yeah, Jackson 5, big. Yeah, I love the Jackson 5.
Aretha Franklin.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Huge. The girl group stuff.
Were you influenced by people like Joan Baez who were also political?
You know, she was a little older. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I was definitely like the Dylan, because we had, I'm number seven, there were several older brothers and sisters Sheila was the only older sister, but, I was definitely into that, but we were a little after that. So more, you know.
Although we loved Joni Mitchell, which
we
was
loved Joni Mitchell.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Joan Baez, I guess we just didn't listen to her much much at our
house. We listen to her now because we love her, but we didn't listen to her when we were younger.
Uh-huh. Yeah, a lot of people were influenced by Joni Mitchell. It's quite amazing.
Joni Mitchell, I mean, the greatest writer.
Yeah, isn't she? She's just an amazing writer. I agree. You are listening to Out of Bounds on WEOS. I'm Tish Perlman, and my guests are the Byrne sisters. You know, I talked to Janice Ian and Chris Williamson and Holly Near, and they talked about how they deliberately wanted to stay independent producers because of all the pressures that are still on women to conform and look right and do a certain thing for the company line. Did you find that when you were trying to pursue national labels?
Well, absolutely, yes. And the thing that changed everything is technology. Once we were able to make our own CDs and you have control over your own music, suddenly you don't need this big record company. You don't need this, you know, we're the producers and we're going to tell you girls what to do. I mean, you know, you don't need that anymore. So, although, you know, there's a place for that. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I feel like I learned a lot through other producers, and now I really enjoy producing my own stuff. Mm-hmm. So,
and having
what about you, Marie?
Artistic.
Oh, definitely. You know, I felt that what I learned with the Columbia deal was watching how the producers work, and really, it's all the people that you pull together for your project, and then you're the producer. I mean, and to get the great instrumentalist, to get the great players, you know, get the great engineer. I mean, really. And
but
so
it's also really learning when to say no.
But learning when to say no, and if you really don't like something, you don't like it.
Yeah, you have to be assertive.
You have to be assertive.
Have
hard
a vision.
To say no.
You have to.
But to me, that's the most fun. I mean, I write, and now Judy and I are actually getting into doing videos.
Oh, yeah.
We both got our new little digital cameras, and
are you really going to pursue that as a?
I don't know.
With the product?
I just
it's
you
been
know
political. We went to Camp Casey and.
In Crawford, Texas.
Videoed a lot of it.
Yeah,
so.
I was going to bring that up. I wanted to talk to you about politics. Are you becoming more political at this point in time?
Well, I think that I have to, as a mother of two children that are of draft age, and I get military recruitment propaganda at my house weekly.
Really?
And as a mother against the war, I really think we all have to be, I mean, I have to be political.
And as I want to say, as an American, we're even more responsible as individuals because people in other countries can't control who's elected in our government. I'm not sure we control it anymore. But
I was just going to say.
Yeah,
really.
but at the same time, I still feel that we have more of an obligation to speak out and act.
We have an obligation for the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I had my daughter's like 23, and I was having a discussion with her. I was saying, we're responsible for what our country does. Even though if everybody wants to drive around their SUVs and be asleep listening to La La La, I don't know. But, you know, it's just like you got to wake up and go, people in other countries are disliking Americans.
Oh,
and
definitely.
With good reason, because we're murdering people in Iraq right now.
Mm-hmm. And we're trapping, they're saying there's no draft, but they have all the kids that are, you know, in the service. The stop loss is keeping them from coming home. And we've met with a lot of families in the last few months that have lost children or that have, like the raging grannies that have grandchildren that are in Iraq. And, I mean, there's just so many families that, I mean, these are the voices we have to hear in Iraq veterans. I'm wearing my I Support Iraq Veterans Against the War, and if people could see who these veterans are, these kids that are just these beautiful people that want this war to end and don't want to be killing people.
And they don't want the stop loss to call them back again. They've
I
already
know.
Done a
they
year
do their time,
over
and then
it's
they have to go back.
And they might
doing.
Have to go back a bunch of, this one kid from Binghamton doing that. Probably
yeah, right, he was going
go
back for his third tour of
it's
duty.
It's just ridiculous.
Well, it seems like it should be illegal.
It just seems to me like having a child and Marie having children that age, it's like when you think about that, I think like my daughters, so I mean, Cindy Sheehan's son was like 22 years
He's
old.
He's 23.
And it's
yeah.
just mm-hmm. incredible because, you know, these are all the kids that, you know, go to, you know, the parents are driving them to college. I mean, I drove my daughter to college. She went to Pratt, and that was great. You know, these kids aren't having those opportunities, and so they're going and dying mm-hmm. for George Bush to go play on his playground in Crawford. I mean,
yeah.
give me a break.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable atmosphere in this country right
Not
now. I've never
I'm
seen
angry.
Anything like it. So is this going to move all of you or some of you to write more political songs as well? Is that anything like
happening.
That? In the,
yeah. We've always been political. I don't know like if you
yeah.
have followed us, but in some ways we haven't, like Jeannie wrote the song No More Silence, which is, and actually Jeannie and Marie wrote them. Mm-hmm. Wrote it. And Sheila has a song called The King's Gonna Fall, which I recorded on my CD. And that's a really good anti-war song. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we've always done, like what we did Stand on our first album from Sweet Honey and the Rock. So we've always done anti-war songs and political songs. Uh-huh. Just haven't, sometimes, you know, you have to, like right now there's no way that you can just sit in the middle. You know,
oh, so
we
absolutely.
Have to,
I can't imagine.
You know, so
I can't imagine, yeah.
Sometimes you have to, like, in order to
you
reach
to take
the other
stand,
side,
right?
You have to take a stand.
Yeah,
at this point.
I agree. Is there any chance that we can get you to sing a little something for us?
You know, maybe we should do Stand, because she has never heard that.
Okay. We will not bow down to, oh no,
sexism.
Oh no, and we will not bow down to, oh no,
racism.
Oh, and we will not bow down to
injustice.
Oh, no, we will not bow down to
exploitation.
What you gonna do?
I'm gonna stand.
I'm gonna stand.
I'm gonna stand.
Oh, we won't tolerate no
sexism.
Oh, no, and we tolerate no
racism.
Oh, no, and we won't tolerate
injustice.
Oh, no, we won't tolerate no
exploitation.
What you gonna do?
I'm gonna stand.
That was great. That
it's
was really
Bernie Honey and the Rock.
Right.
What an appropriate song for now.
Yeah.
It's true. We did that on our first Columbia record.
I don't think
the
they knew what to do with us then. We had all sort of like poppy songs.
Now, are you sure?
They're like, well, I don't know.
So are you sure you got let go because the new guy came in?
It was so cool to see Sweet Honey and the Rock there at the State Theater and then just seeing them like, you know, years later, and they're just...
You know,
oh, they're amazing. I saw them
so
in San Francisco.
Great.
I know, they were absolutely amazing.
You were asking about the sexism and the big record company and all that. Uh-huh. It was unbelievable. At one point, they were trying to get me to wear this bun. They were doing this Burn Sister video, second video. No, I know, in a bra.
In a bra, on the cover of the record.
Oh, your hair in a bun.
My hair in a bun. We all, you know, here were five sisters. We look alike. We had long hair. They want me to wear a bun. I'm going, yeah, I'm not wearing a bun. And finally, I looked at them and said, I'm not wearing the bun. You wear the bun. This is like the woman
that
had
a
video.
You know,
they wanted, at one point, they had a bra ready for Marie to put on for the cover of the album. I'm like, she's not... She can't wear
it was
a bra.
Like just
not
a bra.
Just like just yeah,
just a
black
just
bra.
A bra.
Yeah, well, what's you know, the
let's get it clear. Marie wears bras regularly. No.
Under my clothing.
Was this in the era when Madonna was doing some of that stuff?
I think I saw it around the same time. Yeah.
Funny thing is, I was a nursing mother at the time.
Well, I'm certainly glad you resisted this. I doubt that you would be sitting here now if this was the image.
I'm glad you could edit.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
That's just, so there, see, there are pressures. There are
the
pressures
working
on
mothers.
So, what can we expect with this new CD that's coming out, and when might it be ready?
I'm hoping it'll be ready before the holidays.
That would
that's
be great.
My dream.
Wonder of wonder, once again.
Miracles of miracles.
Well, we're going to have on it two wonderful, beautiful, well, actually, one's a Woody Guthrie song that Alice Paul wrote the lyrics to. It's called God's Promise, that we've been able to perform on the Woody Guthrie Ribbon of Highway Tour. And we're also going to do Vigilante Man, which is sort of appropriate now with the... stuff that's going on with the immigration, our hired guns there in New Mexico. And we're doing Democracy, which we've already got that one almost done, by Leonard Cohen. We're doing a handful of originals, but it seems like we're doing a bunch of songs that we just have to do. One, we're going to record
it's a surprise.
The old version of When Johnny Comes Marching Home, the Irish version, which was an anti-war song.
Oh, yes.
And
that's
it really
gorgeous.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
That's a surprise, but that's okay.
That's just one of the surprises.
Are you going to do that a cappella?
No, it's going to be stripped down.
With an Irish drum. Mm.
Probably
a boron.
Do you have the title for your new CD yet?
No.
You don't?
Called Annie Burns and Her Two Sisters. No, I think it should be called, I don't know, what's a good, Democracy is Good, or, I don't know.
That was the name of a Joan Didion book.
Oh.
Hmm. Yeah. Might have to think of something else. I don't know.
Something. In the way. No. I don't know. We'll figure it out. We never know until it's done.
But we have that to look forward to around the holidays. I hope so.
I hope
you do
so
have it
too.
Out before the holidays.
I think we can do it.
May 3.
We're working with this guitarist who is absolutely wonderful, Jim Kimball in Nashville. He's been on our past, he's been on my project, Marie's project, and the Out of the Blue project. And we met him through our sister Terry. Terry lives in Nashville. And you know, now he's like working with Faith Hill and Reba McEntire. And we were like, Jim, please, do you have time for us? And he's so sweet. He, you know,
That's
made
amazing.
All this time. And he's one of the best guitarists I've ever heard. So mm-hmm. I'm happy. We're happy.
Where are you guys going to be playing live anytime soon?
We're playing at the Rangovian Embassy on October 15th.
Uh-huh. And you'll be unveiling some of your new songs?
We will. Hmm. Well, what's really great about doing this recording is often we record when songs are brand new, but we've actually been able to road test them for about a year or so for a bunch of them, which is a much better way to go into the studio, I think.
Really? So do you tweak it? Or
you tweak it.
You
know
opinions?
The songs
yeah.
better.
You just really get to know the songs.
I mean, sometimes you get the magic of that first recording mm-hmm. of a brand new song, but I think it's great when you really know the song.
Oh, yeah.
How it works for you.
Any solo stuff in the horizon?
You know, I feel like I have a soul something in the horizon because I'm not going to have enough songs ready for this season. That's like, I'm working on about 5 songs. I only get to have, you know, so we have to pick and choose. But mm-hmm. I have something in the distance.
I'm working a little.
Working on something called, the title, I've got the title of the record, Embracing My Shadow. So it's not going to be pretty, folks. It's not going to be Beauty and Light.
Annie's doing that, and
more
this is
possible.
Marie. I'm going to work with Mac Benford on a little mandolin, banjo, record of duets.
Oh, nice.
Old songs.
Nice.
They have to at least be really old. At least
what do you mean
60.
By old? Oh, 60?
70, 80, old songs.
Oh, I thought you meant 40s.
Well,
when you said old songs.
No, I mean like 60, 70 years old.
Oh, 60, 70 years old. I see.
Uh-huh.
Ah, that
could go. You could look at it either way.
That is the 40s.
That is.
There you go.
Exactly.
That's what I mean.
One of us had a dyslexic moment.
What about
Welcome
you, Julia?
To our world.
I don't have any plans for a solo project.
She is going to record on this project a song that she wrote for her
right.
daughter named Ella.
Right. I know.
Because there's no harmonies on my... solo project, and I'm going to change the feel a little and put it on a Burnt Sister
Jim really
project.
Liked that song, you told me.
Mm. It's nice.
That's interesting. And have you thought about writing your autobiographies?
Oh, God.
It's funny, because I was just mentioning to this videographer that I have photographs from, and I'm not a photographer, but I always like to document things. So I would buy these really silly little cameras along the way. For like, since we were about 18 till now, I have photographs of all that time, so it's kind of cool.
The good, the bad, and the ugly.
It's just funny things. Like
you going to use it against
no,
them?
It'd be, no. Funny pictures like sleeping in the airports and that kind of stuff.
Oh, well, I think we're almost out of time, so I want to thank you all for being with us.
Well, thank
you. We look
you.
Forward to the new CD.
Thanks.
Thanks.
All right.
Out of Bounds is produced by Tim Reppert at Rep Studio in Ithaca. We are a project of the Women's Interfaith Institute in Seneca Falls. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. If you want to talk to us, you can email us at weos@hws.edu. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.